Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll hear from Dayton Moore as he met with the media. He always meets with the media at the beginning of the month. With the homestand starting, he met with the media earlier today. We'll play the best of Dayton Moore, what he had to say as the Royals back home for a 7-game homestand. They are 16-10. They are 1.5 games up in the American League Central. Speaking of the American League Central, it would already seem that the White Sox are tired of their manager. Certainly didn't take a whole lot. Didn't even take 30 games. But there are reports from Jeff Passan of ESPN that the White Sox have already grown tired of their manager. So the White Sox, certainly not all on one page. And the Twins stink. They're 6 games back. So certainly a lot of reasons to be optimistic if you are a fan of the Kansas City Royals. We'll get to that coming up in about 15 minutes. Let's keep talking some NFL draft here and talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. So the last time that we saw the Kansas City Chiefs, this was their offensive line. Mike Remmers, Nick Allegretti, Austin Ryder, Wisniewski, and Andrew Wiley. That was their offensive line the last time that we saw them. The next time that we see the Kansas City Chiefs, we could be talking about Orlando Brown, Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, either Laurent Duvernay-Tardif or Kyle Long, and Lucas Niang or Mike Remmers. And that's not even to discredit Trey Smith, who I think factors into the mix from a physical standpoint and certainly has a chance to start at this team for right guard. You cannot make a bigger one-game improvement than the Chiefs have made. It was like the Chiefs sat down and they had all their important people and all the brain trust there, and they were watching the film, and then they determined that what happened to them was never going to happen again. Let's call it what it was. The Chiefs got embarrassed in the Super Bowl. Not from a skill position standpoint. I would even say not from a defensive standpoint. They got embarrassed up front in front of everybody to see. And for the first time, the Chiefs looked human, I would say, since Mahomes has been the quarterback. And Mahomes looked human, but it was certainly understandable because I don't know how you can have success under the duress and pressure that he was constantly on all night with that offensive line. That Andy and Brett Veach just sat right there and came to the conclusion, we'll do whatever it takes to not put ourselves in this situation again. So if that means trading a first-round pick to go get Orlando Brown, do it. It was almost like they got like a unlimited black card, and Clark just said, here. I don't ever want to feel that way again. I don't ever want to feel like we're not tough enough or prepared for a defense of that magnitude. To hell with the cost, do whatever it takes. So you go spend $80 million on a left guard. You go trade, and we're talking about at some point giving out the largest left tackle contract in the history of the NFL. You go pick up Kyle Long, where Kyle Long is thinking about going to play for the Raiders. No, you're coming to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. And you thought they were done? No, we're still going to improve our offensive line. We're going to pick up Creed Humphrey, who you just heard from Jason Kersey, was the best offensive lineman in a Power 5 conference. They got him on the back half of the second round. So you cannot transform your offense and your offensive line much differently, or I would say much better. We're talking about from the AFC Championship game to the Super Bowl to week one next season, the Chiefs could have and will have 5 all brand new starters on the offensive line. Brett Veach had one objective. It was secure and rebuild the offensive line. And that's exactly what he did. Clark Hunt joined us on the show earlier today. Here's what he had to say about the job that Brett Veach did rebuilding the offensive line.
Coming off the AFC Championship loss, 2 years ago, there was a lot of work that had to happen on the defensive side. And Brett did a great job of bringing in some free agents, Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, drafting some players to add to the mix. and really turned what had been a weakness into a strength. And I think in a lot of ways he's done the same thing here in the last 2 months with the offensive line. I would mention that before we had the injuries, we had a very good offensive line last year. And I don't want to minimize the talent or the effort of that group of players. You know, Fisher and Schwartz and their teammates, they did a fantastic job for us in many cases for almost a decade. So that was a great line. But unfortunately, through injury, we were, you know, down to some backups by the time we got to the Super Bowl. And just the way things played out in the offseason, Brett really needed to make it a focus and to revamp it. And you're right. As we stare next year, we're looking at probably five new starters on the offensive line versus what we had last year. So it's going to be completely revamped. But I think the great news is it's not with unknown players, right? We're getting a Pro Bowl left tackle, a Pro Bowl left guard. We brought in some veterans that have experience playing on the interior. We drafted Creed Humphrey yesterday to add to the mix. So I think we've got a lot to look forward to, and I would give Brett very high marks for the job he's done.
There certainly is a lot to look forward to and be excited about if you're someone who follows the Kansas City Chiefs. Rob, you've lived in this town your whole life. Have you ever heard the excitement for a sixth-round pick the way that there is around Trey Smith? Like, you would think that they got their left tackle of the future the way that there's a buzz and optimism around Trey Smith. I give the Chiefs a lot of credit for their draft philosophy this year for two reasons. Number one, they clearly drafted athleticism. They clearly went for, okay, maybe you weren't a super productive college player, but all the measurables check out. Speed, agility, athleticism. Those are things that you can't coach. If you got a 4.4 40 and you're a linebacker, that's not something you can coach. You can coach technique. You can coach up IQ. You can coach up situational football. Some physical traits, either God gave them to you or he didn't. So I look at a guy like Joshua Kando, who a lot of people were comparing to Tano Passanio, which to me is a disrespect to his athleticism. And let's be honest here. One player played at Florida State. One player played at Villanova. And we ain't talking about basketball. So let's not compare Kando to what Tano Passanio was the prospect. One was a top five recruit on Rivals. The other one went to a 1AA school. So let's calm down there. So we'll take a gamble on your physical traits and assets. And we'll take a gamble that once you get under Steve Spagnuolo, I sort of look at Joshua Kando as being their drafted version of Emmanuel Ogba. You remember how Emmanuel Ogba was in Cleveland and was teetering on very average and potentially not even being in the league. He then came to Kansas City, and for whatever reason, the light turned on with him. And they got the most out of his physical traits. He then got injured. We saw him go down to Miami, and I think take what he learned here in Kansas City and had a fantastic year last year. That's how I think Joshua Kando can be. I think he could be an Emmanuel Ogba type, which in the fourth round, as a guy that can get to the quarterback, I can live with that. I think they took that gamble on their coaching staff and to coach up athleticism. That's certainly the case with Trey Smith. Trey Smith is a sixth-round pick. If you watch his film, you watch his tape, you watch his aggressiveness, there's no way you come away thinking that that's a day three pick 229 player. That's a guy who has top 100 athleticism. I saw a chart this weekend where he was the 11th most athletic offensive line that they've tracked in the last 5 years. There's no question with him about his athleticism. The question's with the medicals, but they needed a Kelechi Osemele type. Big, physical, strong, athletic, that ain't taking no mess. That's exactly what they needed. They got it. I'm not here just to sing the praises, Rob, of the Chiefs draft, but I love it. I'm giving it two thumbs up. You and I are different on counting Orlando Brown. They spent the draft pick to acquire a player. I'm counting him toward their draft. They got their left tackle out of this draft. They got a starting center out of this draft. They got a linebacker that will replace Anthony Hitchens, who has one of the worst contracts on the team. They got a pretty promising prospect at guard. They got a pretty promising prospect at defensive end. And they took a flyer on a wide receiver and a tight end. I really like the Chiefs draft. I think they filled a lot of short-term needs with this draft and the amount of resources that they spent on the offensive line. I also think they spent a lot of long-term resources when you factor in center and you also factor in linebacker and the addition of Nick Bolton. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll transition and talk some baseball. Dayton Moore met with the media today for a State of the Union. The Royals are 16-10, and they are leading the American League Central. What does the general manager have to say about it? We'll play it for you next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
So Dayton Moore met with the media earlier today. The Royals are back in town. They have a 7-game homestand, 4 against Cleveland, 3 against Chicago. The Royals are 16-10. They are 1.5 games up over the Chicago White Sox. They are 6 games up over the Minnesota Twins. So Dayton, at the beginning of every month, sits down, meets with the media, sort of a state of the union, sort of a temperature check on where the Kansas City Royals are. He was asked a very simple question. Can the Royals get better? Here's Dayton's answer.
We're going to need to continue to develop from within. That's why I'm really looking forward to the minor league starting. The way this thing's trending right now, we're going to need more pitching. We're going to need more depth, throughout the year. I believe we have that. Internally, we don't have enough roster spots because the roster from a talent level is at a pretty high level, actually, right now, we feel. And there's not a lot of room to add guys, but, there'll have to be some tough decisions that we're going to make along the way. Again, being able to utilize Hunter Dozier and Whit Merrifield in those versatile roles is going to be really important for our depth. And as we go forward, just the mindset and the attitude of Jake Junis is a great predictor to where these 26 men are right now, with expecting to win and wanting to win, with the mindset that they'll perform in any role that we ask them to do for the good of the team. And so I think there's a lot of positives in our group. And, I've been asked quite a bit over the last couple of weeks about the start of our team. And I sum it up the following way. I mentioned, you know, Mike Matheny, the great work that he and the coaching staff do each and every day. And the fact that we got winning players. We got players that know how to win, been a part of winning teams in the past. They develop a sense, an instinct, a feel, a belief on how the game's going to go sometime within the first three innings, and they start anticipating what they're going to have to do over the next six, seven innings to win the game. And so when they're put in that situation, they're prepared for it, and that comes with experience.
That was Dayton Moore earlier today when asked if the team can get better. Rob, isn't the very simple answer yes, and you can really point to one stat that everyone can understand? Run differential. Right now, the Royals have a negative run differential. Yes, they are in first place, and all that matters in the end is what your win and loss record is. But history suggests if you have a negative run differential, you're not going to finish over 500. Over the last five full seasons in baseball, there have only been five teams who have had a negative run differential and finished above 500. It's a really difficult thing to do to play at the level that the Royals are playing at if you get outscored over a consistent sample size. So we want to find a very simple, can the Royals get better? I think it's A, being a little bit more consistently offensively, and some of that's getting guys going that are now getting going, like Andrew Benintendi and some of the other pieces offensively, and certainly Brad Keller. But a big part of are they going to be able to sustain this is very simply turning the run differential around, because you are not, I would say the Royals aren't more talented than a lot of other teams. Their talent is certainly better than we had anticipated, but the Royals certainly aren't going to out-talent everybody over a course of 162. And you are just not making the playoffs. You're not finishing over 500 if you're going to have a negative run differential. So if we want to find very one simplistic way to boil it down on how this team can get better or maintain where they are, it's turning that around.
One thing that really stood out to me from that cut with Dayton, and let me know if you think the same thing here, is that he said, we have a lot of talent in the minors. We just don't have the positions right now available for the pitching staff. That's an that's a very exciting cut to me, because A, it's something we've heard. There are arms in the minor leagues that are come up and make impact immediately. It's more than just your Daryl Mays and your Jimmy Gobbles. No offense to those two specifically. But these are real, viable arms. And two, they don't have the space because the guys up here are performing. That's a perfect spot to be in. So I agree with the run differential point, but another point of how this team can get better is if a guy waivers, and I'm air quoting waivers, they go from a 3.8 ERA to a 4 ERA guy, you bring up a guy who goes back to 3 ERA guy. So I think the pitching has a chance to get better from the already good we've seen. I think Dayton said it in there. And if the hitters that we think can actually hit, Mondesi will eventually come back. We can have our differences of opinion on Mondesi, text line, I know, but we believe he's a good hitter. Dozier eventually is going to get it going, and I think Benintendi's coming out of his slow start. I do agree with Dayton. There's a lot of room for improvement in this team, which is exciting at 16-10 and winning the division.
I would say the two biggest storylines right now with the Kansas City Royals, if we're talking about on an individual level, one is Danny Duffy and how fantastic he's been. Danny Duffy has arguably been the best pitcher in the American League. He has been downright phenomenal so far this season. On the other side, if you want to go glass half empty, it's Brad Keller. Brad Keller's been bad. There's really no other way to put it. We can talk about WARP and BABIP and all of those stats. He has had six starts so far this season. He doesn't have a quality start this year. He has an ERA that is over eight. Brad Keller has been the biggest disappointment on this roster. Dayton Moore was asked about it, and he said he's not worried.
I'm not concerned about Brad Keller at all. Brad Keller is the same determined, hardworking pitcher today than he was when we had him for the very first time in spring training after the Rule 5. You don't make it as a Rule 5 pick and stick and have the success that Brad Keller's had unless he's special. So I rely on that. Hey, look, as we all know, the major leagues isn't easy. And hitters make adjustments, and at the end of the day, Brad's just got to stay convicted in what he does. And you know, we the guys would tell you, we need to play some better defense behind him, and we will. But I mean, that's not an excuse. I mean, but you know, it's again, if you have a letdown in any one area, with your team on any given night, there's a good chance you're going to lose. You know, if you don't play good defense, you're probably going to lose a game. If your bullpen struggles for an inning, you're probably going to lose the game. If your starting pitching isn't up to par, you're probably going to lose the game. If you don't take advantage of pitches that you should hit and situational hitting, you don't throw to the right bases, you don't move up on a dirt ball, you don't turn a double play. When you're competing against the best of the best, there's a good chance that you're going to lose those games if you don't execute in all phases. And so that's the type of team we have. I mean, we have a team that has to play very fundamentally sound. We have to execute on defense. We have to execute on offense. We got to make pitches. We got to pick each other up. I mean, we got to run the bases well. We got to show up every single day mentally and physically prepared to play.
That was Dayton Moore talking about Brad Keller and where he is, let's call it what it is. He's been one of the bigger disappointments so far this season for the Kansas City Royals. I understand not being worried about him if you are management. I understand you don't want to overreact to six starts. We're talking about a guy who has had a really good 2.5 years. You don't want to overreact to 1.5 months of starting games for your organization. I think the question to ask Dayton, and he probably wouldn't give you the concrete timetable on the record, I don't think there is yet, is how long do you plan on carrying this if it continues? The Royals have a chance to make the playoffs. I know we still got a long way to go, and there's still 5 months of baseball left, but the Royals have a chance to stay in this thing the duration of the season. The Royals have a chance to be a playoff team. So when you got games in the division, like 16 of the next 18 for the Kansas City Royals, and you have a chance to sneak up and be a wild card team, how long can you carry somebody who has been dead weight? Let's call Brad Keller what he is. Brad Keller has one good start this season. He has been bad for most of the season. He was billed to be this team's ace. He's been their worst starter. How long do you plan on carrying him? Is it two more starts? Is it we'll give him until the end of the month and Memorial Day? What's the timeline the Royals sort of have their threshold with Brad Keller? If it doesn't turn around by X, we will do Y. This certainly feels like a phantom shoulder injury. This feels like a phantom shoulder injury. He misses a couple of starts in his rotation. He then goes down, maybe has one kind of bounce back, get your confidence right start, and then we reset this thing June 1. It sort of has that feel. Like if Brad Keller went out his next start, which he'll start one time this week, probably against Cleveland, probably like Thursday or Friday, and he gets rocked in that start, which is not outside the realm of possibility with how he's pitched so far this season, and now we're at 7 starts, I could very easily see he's on the disabled list, elbow tightness, and let's see if we can adjust some things, and let's just take a little bit of a woosah. That's sort of where we're starting to head with Brad Keller. So I'm not saying the Royals got to worry or panic or we got to move somebody's timeline up because Keller hasn't been good enough, but I do think asking the very simple question of, well, when do you get worried and how long are you going to give him? How long is that rope? I think is a fair question to ask of Dayton Moore. On the flip side of Brad Keller has been Danny Duffy, who has been amazing. Danny Duffy has been fantastic. Dayton Moore was asked about his belief in the Royals starter.
We've always believed in his arm. We've always believed in his heart as a Wilson. And, you know, he's been true to what we've seen over the last, you know, 13, 14 years or whatever it's been here. And so, but, you know, just coming into camp, Vahe was just focused and just ready to take the next step. You know, I think Danny, as I said before, he's had stretches like this in the past. And I still believe to this day, if he wouldn't have had that hairline fracture in his rib 14, I believe we would have won the World Series in 14 as well. I mean, that's how much I believe in Danny Duffy. He's a very kind-hearted person, as we know. As teammates, the fans, the community is always appreciated that kindness and transparency and in accountability as much as anything else. Whether he's had struggles on the field or off the field, he's He's been willing to be accountable for them. There's very few people that are as easy to root for. I mean, Danny is and believe in, because once he takes the ball, he's going to give you everything that he has. He's always been that way.
A great man once told me that a contract year is undefeated, and I who exemplifies that quote more than Danny Duffy. Danny Duffy is in the final year of his contract. He is 32 years old. He will turn 33 at the end of the season, but he is also a left-hander who has shown you an ability to start, which he's done numerous times in his career, also shown you that he can be a great long relief guy and a bridge type. Danny Duffy has put all of he has an ERA of 0.6, not even at a full dollar yet. 60 cents is his ERA. He's only given up 20 hits in his 30 innings pitched. He has given up 2 earned runs, both of which were homers. His strikeout to walk ratio is 34-9. Danny Duffy has not been good. Danny Duffy has not been just great. He has been elite. He has been arguably the best pitcher in the American League, arguably the second best pitcher in all of baseball. It has all come together in a way for Danny Duffy that we have not seen really for any Royals player come together, at least in this magnitude. And it's early, so we don't got to have the Cy Young conversation. But this is the best start that a Royals pitcher has had as a starter since Zach Greinke in 2009, who won the Cy Young. And if Danny Duffy puts together another month of this, Danny Duffy will make the All-Star team. If Danny Duffy has a May anywhere comparable to what he just did in the month of April, he will make the All-Star team. Not as like a, hey, it's cute, the Royals got to have somebody All-Star, because I think it's pretty clear that Salvador Perez is going to make the All-Star game this year. Like, they're going to have multiple All-Stars and multiple deserving All-Stars. One of those individuals will be Danny Duffy. That is how good Danny Duffy has been so far this season. Last cut here we'll play from Dayton Moore, who met with the media earlier today, is Dayton is not surprised by the start that the Royals have gotten off to.
We talked a lot about getting off to a good start. I think it's always important to do that. We talk about that each and every year. I really credit Mike and a coaching staff for being extremely prepared, setting the tone, and, of course, our players coming into camp with a great mindset. Mike, as I said, really setting the tone. And, our players, of course, get the credit. But we're really pleased with, the month of April. We want to put that behind us, learn from it, continue to get better, and hopefully have a better May. But you're always wanting to get off to a good start. It's important for, I believe, the psychology of the team. It just creates momentum, a belief, and it's really important for our team. But I really, as I said, I credit Mike and the coaching staff and our players.
The Royals are 16-10. They're the best team in the American League Central. They're one of the 5 best teams in all of baseball. And you look at the upcoming schedule, 16 of their next 18 games are in the American League Central. By the end of this month, we will know everything we need to know about the Royals. We will know if April was real or not. We'll know if this team has a legitimate chance of making the playoffs. I think we'll have a clear answer or not if the Royals can actually win the American League Central, because I think that's a place that not a lot of people are willing to go yet, and I'd even put myself in that category about winning the American League Central. I'm there for them being in it and having a chance to be one of the wild card teams. I still think Chicago turns it around, and they're just more talented than the Royals, and they win the American League Central. But the Royals have 2 series against the White Sox this month, 1 home, 1 road. They play 6 games. The Royals can win both of those series and go 4-2, or maybe even split it. So they take care of the home series, and then they lose the one. So we're at the exact same place. You start to build more confidence and create more momentum and legitimately give yourself reason to think that this team could go on to win the American League Central. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get to the Chiefs draft. But before we do that, Daniel Lynch is up. He's here. The next wave of prospects is upon us. Rob, what are you expecting today from Daniel Lynch, who's making his major league debut tonight against Cleveland?
Now, I want to preface by saying I kind of have lofty expectation for tonight, but that's because Jay Binkley has told anyone that will listen that since baseball season started, Cleveland can't hit. Cleveland has no hitters. Cleveland's hitting is bad. How many hitters can you on Cleveland? Great pitching, terrible hitting. I hear Bink in my head now telling me how bad the Cleveland hitting is. So I think expectation for Lynch tonight is what Singer did in his debut last year against this same Cleveland team, albeit that team had Francisco Lindor. This one doesn't. That's 5 innings, 2 runs, 5+ strikeouts. I think that's a solid expectation from Daniel Lynch. Obviously, if tomorrow, if we're talking about a guy who went 7, had 9 or 10 Ks and 1 run or less, I'll be elated. But give me 5 with 1 or 2 earned and 5+ strikeouts, and I will be very, very happy with Daniel Lynch's performance tonight.
Dayton Moore called Daniel Lynch's call-up a special day for the organization.
Special day, Fizz, for the entire organization. And certainly Danny Lynch, you know, his entire family, all of his youth league coaches, everybody in this community, everybody that's had a hand in him getting to where he is right now. And certainly our player development staff is no different. Our scouting staff, I think of Jim Farr and Keith Conley and, you know, those in the draft room that really pushed for him. Lonnie Goldberg, who is a tremendous scouting director, and it just gets better and better each day as an evaluator and a manager of people, and Danny Ontiveros, and of course, you know, Paul Gibson and JJ Piccolo, and you know, all of the pitching coaches that Daniel's had throughout the system. I mean, it's a great celebration, and but he's going to be a special one. I mean, I really believe that. You know, he's got some incredible gifts, being very physical and left-handed, and he's got height and leverage and the ability to spin the ball, which is a gift. He's got power to all of his pitches, a changeup that just keeps getting a little bit better and better. It's a tremendous feeling when you draft a player, sign a player, and then he transitions all the way through the minor leagues and then makes his major league debut. I mean, that's what it's all about.
So congratulations to Daniel Lynch, who is making his major league debut tonight at Kauffman Stadium. They're increasing the attendance. His family's going to be there. We'll see 17,000 to watch the Royals this tonight against the Cleveland Indians. Let's talk a little bit of Kansas City Chiefs football as the draft has concluded itself. I thought this weekend was pretty telling in finding out what the Chiefs deemed to be their needs and what they didn't seem to be their needs. Because we all sit here as fans and media members and sports talk radio hosts like myself, and we sort of make an evaluation on what the Chiefs need to come away with. Hey, heading into this offseason, this is what you need. Hey, heading into this draft, this is what you need to come away with. I think we now have a pretty clear understanding of what the Chiefs deem to be as needs. At this point, at least when it comes to wide receiver, there is no one that is drastically going to move the needle for the Chiefs offensively. Now, edge rusher, Melvin Ingram, still out there. Justin Houston, still out there. So we could see an improvement when it comes to edge rusher and them doing a little bit more than Joshua Kando, who got picked in the 4th round. At corner, Richard Sherman, still on the board. Bashaud Breeland, still on the board. So same logic applies. We could see a drastic improvement when it comes to those two positions. The Chiefs told us what they deemed their needs to be. Linebacker was a significant need. They've now told us that the last 2 years, they have spent a significant resource at linebacker. Second round picks are not something that you're just taking flyers on. Willie Gay is a significant investment in the linebacker position. Second round draft pick. Nick Bolton, top 60 pick. A significant resource used at linebacker. Interior offensive line. The Chiefs, no one would have faulted this organization by saying we have enough offensively. We have enough on the offensive line. We spent a first round pick on an offensive lineman. We gave out the second largest free agent contract on offensive line. We picked up Kyle Long. We get Lucas Niang back out of opting out. Like, we've spent a lot of resources this offseason when it comes to offensive line. We're good. I wouldn't have faulted them. They say, no. We still have a need at center, still have a need potentially at right guard. So let's pick up another interior offensive lineman and spend a top 75 pick on another offensive lineman. The Chiefs told us what their needs were. They still needed more on the offensive line. They still needed another linebacker. On the flip side, inversely, they also told us right now what they feel really good about. Brett Veach told us before the draft how confident he was in this wide receiver group, and I'm not going to lie to you, I didn't believe him. They made a pretty public push to go get Juju Smith-Schuster. They were willing to give Juju $8 million plus three in incentives. That ain't chump change. They were willing to make a significant investment on Juju Smith-Schuster at a wide receiver. So I'm kind of putting two and two together the same way I think you could do an offensive line. All right, you were willing to take a swing on Trent Williams. You missed. Their plan B was Orlando Brown. They were willing to take a pretty big swing to try to acquire Juju Smith-Schuster. They missed. He went back to Pittsburgh. I didn't think that then they weren't going to do anything. Now, I don't want to call Cornell Powell nothing, but they didn't spend a significant resource on wide receiver. It's a big difference than going out and spending potentially $11 million at wide receiver and then a fourth, fifth round pick on a guy who put together one good college season. Drastic difference between those two guys. So they don't see wide receiver as the need that I see it as. I look at this team, and understandably that Kelce counts as a wide receiver, but he plays tight end. They have one proven wide receiver on their roster, and that's Tyreek Hill. And that's a great proven wide receiver to have, but they have one. Mecole Hardman, not proven. DeMarcus Robinson, not proven. Byron Pringle, not proven. Cornell Powell, not a significant resource. Maybe a cut happens and they'll pick up another proven wide receiver. Maybe they trade for Julio Jones. Maybe heading into training camp, something happens. They trade a future sixth round pick to acquire somebody's wide receiver who's maybe not going to make the roster. Kind of like what happened with Carlos Hyde a couple of years ago. So I don't think they're done with the roster building. But it was obvious in the draft what they saw as immediate needs and pressing needs and what they were willing to wait to see if they could fill those positions. They didn't wait at linebacker. First resource they had that used it on linebacker. They didn't wait on interior offensive linemen, even though they've picked up two this offseason with Blythe and also Kyle Long. And they're willing to push the problem down the road, so to speak, when it comes to wide receiver and linebacker. Or excuse me, wide receiver and corner. You guys know how I feel about corner. You know how I feel about playmakers. It's a playmaker league. So we'll see how the Chiefs fill those needs between now and the start of training camp. Speaking of Brett Veach, Brett Veach continues to define himself. I'll explain what I mean. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Top stories like Daniel Lynch making his major league debut for the Kansas City Royals. Here's J.J. Piccolo.
Well, it's certainly an exciting day, not only for Daniel, but his family, friends that are all going to be here in attendance. And then, the scouting staff gets to celebrate this. The development department gets to celebrate it. But, ultimately, Daniel's done all the work. He's done a great job. He's prepared. We've talked about him several times. He's just a wonderful individual who's earned the right to get this start tonight, and hopefully it's the first of many to come.
So we'll get back to that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as we get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. If you missed it, we were joined by Clark Hunt. He is the chairman, CEO, and owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll also replay that conversation coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Clark Hunt joined us earlier and talked about the job that Brett Veach has done rebuilding this offensive line.
Coming off the AFC championship loss, 2 years ago, there was a lot of work that had to happen on the defensive side. And Brett did a great job of bringing in some free agents, Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, drafting some players to add to the mix, and really turned what had been a weakness into a strength. And I think in a lot of ways he's done the same thing here in the last 2 months with offensive line. I would mention that before we had the injuries, we had a very good offensive line last year. And I don't want to minimize the talent or the effort of that group of players. You know, Fisher and Schwartz and, their teammates, they did a fantastic job for us in many cases for almost a decade. So that was a great line, but unfortunately, through injury, we were down to some backups by the time we got to the Super Bowl. And just the way things played out in the offseason, Brett really needed to make it a focus and to revamp it. And you're right, as we stare next year, we're looking at probably five new starters on the offensive line versus what we had last year. So it's going to be completely revamped. But I think the great news is it's not with unknown players, right? We're getting a Pro Bowl left tackle, a Pro Bowl left guard. We brought in some veterans that have experience playing on the interior. We drafted Creed Humphrey yesterday to add to the mix. So I think we've got a lot to look forward to, and I would give Brett very high marks for the job he's done.
So that was Clark Hunt, owner, chairman, CEO of the Kansas City Chiefs. If you missed our conversation with him, he'll be on the show coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Text line is open. Phone line is open. 913-576-7610. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs draft. If you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you know I've had my questions and doubts about Brett Veach. He and I would just build a football team very differently. Not saying that the way I would build it is wrong or the way that he would build it was right. We just have differing opinions on what you need to build a team. I do think there have been two separate times that have defined him as being general manager of this franchise. The first one was heading into the offseason in 2019. At that point, everybody knew that you were set at quarterback. The Chiefs had scored the third most points for a team in the history of the NFL. They had to make a very obvious decision on letting Bob Sutton go, had to get the hire right. They hired Steve Spagnuolo. And they had to radically improve the talent on their defense. And boy, did they. They went out day one and picked up Tyrann Mathieu, who wasn't the highest paid safety. You remember that offseason, Landon Collins had got a big deal. There were a couple safeties who got bigger contracts than Tyrann Mathieu. It wasn't about signing the most expensive free agent. It was about signing the right free agent and the right fit for the Chiefs as an organization. I think we can say that they've got that. They got a potential Hall of Fame safety, and that's exactly what Tyrann Mathieu is. And if you look at the numbers, he has been the best slot corner in the entire NFL. If you look at the numbers, he has been the best slot cornerback in the National Football League since the Chiefs got him. And at the contract that they gave Tyrann Mathieu, steal, bargain. They needed a little bit more edge, a little bit more attitude. They made the right decision on getting rid of D Ford. They made the right decision in not bringing back Justin Houston and then went out and traded for and then signed Frank Clark. Now he hasn't always played up to the contract, hasn't always played up to the compensation, but certainly was a major part of why this team went to and won the Super Bowl and certainly has provided the attitude and the demeanor that this team needed. So they had a pretty big task in front of them on the fly in turning arguably the worst defense in the NFL into a defense that you could win a Super Bowl with. They did it in one offseason. They now were faced with, I would say, a pretty comparable ask. They had, at least the last time we saw this team, one of the worst offensive lines that you could field. They had an offensive line that did not give you a chance to win at a high level and not defeat high-level competition. They got embarrassed in the Super Bowl. They got dominated. Tampa Bay was nastier, more physical, more aggressive. Just pushed Kansas City around. They needed an attitude shift on the offensive line. They needed a huge infusion in talent, and that's exactly what Brett Veach did. So a lot of times we're defined by our biggest moments or when we're needed most. When the Kansas City Chiefs have needed Brett Veach to do a singular task, he has allocated a bunch of resources to figuring out that problem. The last time they had a problem that was as bad as the offensive line, they fixed it. They got a pretty bad problem right now, which is their offensive line. It appears they fixed it. Pro Bowl left tackle, All-Pro left guard, top prospect center, former All-Pro right guard, very athletic right tackle, Lucas Niang, one of the best prospects coming out. Now he's had a year to get his back right, fully healthy medically. So this offseason to me was a very simple pass or fail. Were they going to have a better offensive line or comparable offensive line to the one that they had week one last year against Houston? Unless something terrible happens in training camp, let me knock on wood, I think we have the answer to that question. They are a better offensive line than they were last year. They're going to be more physical, more athletic. I think this opens things up for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We haven't really talked about what this means for the run game, that I think they're nastier and more physical upside. And last year's team just couldn't really run the ball very successfully for most of the season, even when they were fully healthy. I think they are in a much better situation now. And all of that is credited to Brett Veach. He has been defined by two things. The first time was, how are you going to fix this defense? They fixed the defense. They won a Super Bowl. He's now been faced with a similar question. How are you going to fix the offensive line? We have the answer of how they were going to do it. And they've done so at a really high level where their top eight is better than the top eight that they had last year going into a season in which they were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. You can't do a better job in a three-month span with a problem than I think Brett Veach has done. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get to the top stories. But before we do that, I just want to take 60 seconds, just a minute of your time, to ask a very important question. Rob, can you hit the music, please? So Kansas this weekend had their spring game, right? Rob, can you tell me how Kansas got blown out in their own spring game? So Kansas can't be competitive with the other teams in the Big 12. They also can't be competitive against themselves. Kansas lost by 32 in their own spring game. How do you get blown out in your own spring game? Can you explain that to me? Maybe I'm missing something here.
Didn't they also win by 32? It was a no-lose situation, right?
Their offense lost by 32 to the defense.
Obviously, that 0-1 Miami Hurricanes team is the Kansas defense. Obviously. Only thing we can logically jump to.
I'm trying to figure out how you get beat by 32 in your own spring game. And sometimes the jokes write themselves. They got blown out against themselves. Kansas can't even be competitive against themselves. How can you expect to close the gap between you and the ninth place team in the Big 12 if you can't even close the gap in your own locker room? You guys hired a coach. I know you're excited about that. You guys did a good job hiding that hire. Hey, let's do it right in the middle of the NFL draft so nobody talks about it. That's smart by you guys. If you guys had done that on Wednesday, we would have talked about it. But no, let's do it on Thursday in the middle of the draft. They also probably planted that Aaron Rodgers story to really hide it. Now we know who fed all that information. That's why Aaron's been hanging out at Allen Fieldhouse. They've been leaking information. Kansas lost by 32 in their own spring game. I mean, the jokes write themselves. Like, I'm not here telling any jokes. I mean, that's a fact.
Did you see the trophy they got?
I mean, they haven't won a trophy in 9 years.
Oh, there was a spring game trophy.
I saw it.
Like 16 feet tall.
It was taller than Wilt Chamberlain. You know that big Jayhawk they have at the middle of center court? It was as long as that is. I've never seen a trophy as big as the one they had for not winning anything of real consequence. Where do you put the spring game trophy? Like, is there a way for a regular fan to go see it? Are you guys putting it next to the hallway where the rules of basketball are, where it's just like this random hallway? It's like, oh, here, let's put this $4.5 million document. You know, we should just put right next to it in the rally house, the 19-foot spring game trophy that we lost against ourselves, where we lost by 32. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. If you missed it, Clark Hunt, chairman, CEO, owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, joined us. We'll play that for you. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.